I see you have a Penn State shirt on.
Yes, yes.
I'm rocking a Dry Bones shirt because he's the best Mario Kart character.
I mean, I don't know what alternate universe he's the best Mario Kart character, because Toad exists in this universe, and he is the best Mario character, period.
Well, that's debatable, because we know our boy, Wario, is...
He's not my boy.
He is...
No.
Listen, we played an entire game that was dedicated to him.
We played an entire game in which he was a dick who stole our castle, so he's not my boy.
Welcome, everybody, to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today... Well, today we're going to be talking about a game that's a sequel, kind of, to another game that we've reviewed and talked about on this podcast before.
Yes, the very first game we talked about on this podcast.
But before we get into that, they're going to probably know from the title of the game. I got to hit you, though, with some very special trivia.
Right. We can't go back to 2016 until we know enough information about 2016. So Josh, what are the research questions? What are the research questions?
Let me get my glasses.
Okay.
So what famous book turned 25 years old in 2016? And that book went on to become a hit movie years after its release.
So 1991. Goodfellas. No, the movie came out. Never mind. No, wait. A book that came out in 91 and became a hit movie. What genre?
I would say suspense, thriller.
Jurassic Park?
The answer is American Psycho.
Oh, dang. Okay. I've never read that book. My fiance Mary has. She said it's, if you could believe it, even more upsetting and disturbing than the movie.
So... But,
I am a fan of feeding stray cats to ATMs. Yep. So,
so going off of the 25 year anniversary of something, what famous kid group turned 25 years old in 2016?
You hit me with a lot of birthdays here. Well, that would have to be New Kids on the Block, correct?
You know, that's what my wife said, and the correct answer is The Wiggles.
Wow. I did not know they were a product of the 90s. I thought they were like a 2000s thing.
No.
Okay.
And
interesting.
As of recording this, today's date is June 29th, 2020. What video game was released on this date in 2016?
Big oof from me here. Give me genre.
I can't give you that genre. It'll spoil it.
Give me the tone of the game.
I can't. It's dark and mysterious.
It's a dark and mysterious game?
Yeah.
Wait, it's not Inside, is it?
Ladies and gentlemen, happy fourth birthday to the video game Inside.
I remembered in reading my research that this was a summer release, and then I'm like, oh, wait, is this a trick question?
And today's episode is Play Dead's Inside.
Very good. Thank you, Josh, for saving me, because if we had time traveled to 2016 and I had been asked about the Wiggles, I would have looked like a fool.
Yes. So today we are going to be talking about Playdead's sequel to Limbo. I wouldn't even say it's a sequel.
Spiritual successor. Kind of, you know.
Yeah. So, Tom, this was your first time playing Inside recently.
Yes, this wasn't even a planned episode on our little to-do list, but I mentioned to you that I had, like, gotten it off of Game Pass, you know, because I'm just kind of amassing a couple games that I know are relatively short in length to get through some things I've always wanted to try, and this was one of them. As soon as I said this, you were like, oh, I played that game, it's great, let's talk about it as soon as you're done. 48 hours later, here we are.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you told me where you were at, and I'm like, oh, like, you're like a little over halfway through the game already, so we should be able to just talk about this pretty quick. The game's not super long. It's about a two and a half hour long game, depending on what you decide to do in it. But yeah, it's pretty cut and dry when it comes to, it's very straightforward.
It is. And I'm looking forward to talking about it. But let's talk about Playdead first, because Limbo, gigantic success for them.
It was, yes.
Monumental success. So Limbo comes out and wows everybody. It's this artistic and critical and commercial success. And then they slowly start planning their next game. You know, there was quite a gap between Limbo and Inside. And, you know, the developers, from what I read, they did that on purpose. You know, they didn't want to rush something out. They wanted it to breathe. But parts of Inside were actually on the development team's brain before Limbo was even released, believe it or not. And we'll get into that as we talk about the development history. But Josh, I have a question for you. Did you happen to notice in the credits that they gave a special thanks to the Danish Film Institute?
I did, yes.
Do you know why specifically?
I believe they were given like a big grant to be able to make this game, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Quite a big grant. $1 million towards the creation of this game, which I think is really impressive that like an artistic institute would, you know, respect the vision of like a video game so much to give them seven figures towards making it, you know?
Yeah.
So it really tells you how impressive Limbo was, you know, just as a work of art. We talked about it a lot in our first episode. You know, we were both kind of finding our voices in terms of being podcasters, but we were obsessing over the artistic style of that game. It stood out
for how
so
simplistic
easily.
It was that it left such an impression on the gaming world and the art world, like when it comes to a wonderful 2.5D artistic masterpiece almost.
Absolutely. So Inside, a little more colorful than Limbo, wouldn't you say?
You know? there's way more than three colors in this game.
But they're used very specifically. I can't think of what kind of art, like style of art, I would compare the character designs and the world to. But they've got a very unique 3D look. It's like kind of cel-shaded to a degree. Would you agree with that? Like very muted.
Yeah. The art style is like when you see like a 3D rendered object, like in early stages of being released. And that's what it looks like. They just took all of those pieces and put them into a game. But it's so fluent and it fits the world that they created.
Yes. Specifically, what they did is they took the custom engine that was used to create Limbo and they kind of converted it into the Unity engine, which is a little bit more widely used in game development. Yeah. The one that just comes to mind, I know Ukulele was made in the Unity engine, but they did that so that they could get more developers working on Inside, because Unity, it's more well known than, you know, having, here's a custom engine we built for this one game, learn it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Color's a little bit more prominent, obviously. The main character wears a red shirt throughout, which makes him stand out in the environment. And there's obviously certain puzzle elements are colored in a way that's supposed to draw your eye to them. Whether it's like a red lever or the one puzzle with the little yellow chicks and the chicks are following you around.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So Inside was actually debuted at Microsoft's E3 conference in 2014, but it was released almost 2 years later on June 29th, 2016. And about a week or so later on Windows PC. And it didn't hit PlayStation until about August, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. And then the Switch 2 years later, I believe in late 2018.
No, it wasn't late. It was on June 28th. So it was actually yesterday. Yesterday, 2 years ago.
Wow, they're just lining this up.
It's weird.
They like consistency. I admire that. But yeah, so let's talk about Inside. It's got one of those stories you can summarize in almost 2 to 3 sentences, but the journey of those 2 or 3 sentences, it's something, man. This was an intense game.
Yes. And I will say that this game that's the best word to use for it, was intense. I will tell you right now, I think playing this game, dogs have never been scarier in my entire life. When those dogs would run, the way that the animation to them, they felt so realistic and so dangerous. I don't know how they did it, because I've played other games with evil dogs or anything along those lines, and I've never witnessed any of those type of dogs where I was terrified of like I was in this game.
Yeah, absolutely. The AI on them is very well done, and escaping them just by like a sliver of an inch got like deep breaths out of me. And when you fail to escape, the graphic nature, you thought the deaths in Limbo were upsetting and graphic. Yeah. This, not only the deaths more creative but and over the top, but they're even more upsetting if you can believe it.
Yeah, the best thing when I was typing up my notes and stuff for this game, the phrase that I used a lot when it came to the enemies was perfectly timed danger. Because you can escape every single danger in this game just by this much. Like, it's just a little, like, you're running, and the dogs are right behind you, and when you jump, it's right when they should have taken you. And it's just like everything is so perfectly timed. When you're swimming under the water and those weird mermaid creature things are coming after you, you're just getting past them. The door's just closing behind you. Like, it's perfectly timed. And it's just, it's so impressive what they've done with this game.
100% agreed. And there's, you know, lots of times where I didn't survive those encounters because my timing wasn't exact. And I just kind of had to be like, okay, you know, you gotta know what you gotta do, and you gotta do it right. And when you do, you feel so good.
And
just
what,
from it.
What just makes it even worse too is the ominous tone of that adds so much suspense behind what you're doing.
Like, oh, it just absolutely.
Adds, oh shit.
Because this is a quiet game.
Yes.
Except for, like, a lot of ambient noise for, like, you know, electronics, countryside, like animals, wind. But when you're in high stakes situations, kind of like how in, you know, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, music doesn't kick in unless it has to.
Yeah.
And that's to set a mood. Same thing here. And if frequently music is just used for danger, and you, it makes you feel it even more, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's something. Josh, you want to, like, why don't you kick off and we'll kind of guide through a brief rundown of the narrative, because we're going to talk about like the bones of the narrative beginning to end.
Yeah.
And then I want to really get into interpretations, because like Limbo, I'd say this is even more ambiguous than Limbo.
Yes,
if
it
you
is.
Think about
yes,
it.
Yes, it is. So you just start off this game running through the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just, it looks like you kind of just came right out of the woods and you're booking it. And you're hiding from a lot of people and trucks and animals and all this kind of stuff. Like, you're on the run from something.
Mm-hmm. And like the tension's there from the beginning. The player character, this young unnamed boy, he's just scared. And, you know, like, what is it? What is he scared of? You don't get the answer. But the world around him is so terrifying. It's like any of these nightmare things could be what he's scared of.
Right.
And a note on what you mentioned, there's trucks. It's trucks full of people, like people being captured, put into trucks, you know, like it's upsetting, you know, like a little Holocaust-y imagery, you know, they're just being rounded up and carted off somewhere. So
yeah,
it's getting intense right off the bat.
You're always on the run in this game.
Mm-hmm.
And either when you're trying to, you know, run through the woods, when you get to the farm and you're in the little test area there, it looks like we have a whole bunch of those like little, those big pigs. Which, I don't know if it was a callback to Limbo, but the one pig had that thing stuck in the back of it that was kind of, like, making it go crazy.
I thought the same thing. It's a little worm, similar to, like, the brain slugs in Limbo.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of a puzzle, is popping that slug off of the pig and then controlling the pig as it freaks out. Yeah. But, yeah, you get a sense of these weird sci-fi experiments or things throughout the game, and they take different shapes, the worm being the earliest one.
Yeah, you got the worm, you had the weird like headpiece thing that you would get to kind of mind control people and take over their bodies.
Do you want to talk about that mechanic in depth really quick?
I mean, it's almost the opposite of the worm thing taking over you in Limbo, where you put this headpiece on and you're taking over the people and controlling them, and it's more based around puzzle gimmicks. Or where it's having two people stand on certain platforms, or having a certain number of people follow you into a elevator because you need to lift this elevator and it needs a certain amount of people in it. Or it's just a weird mechanism that it's almost like you feel wrong using it.
Yeah, it's not, it's very much painted as like you're violating someone or something.
Yeah.
Mind control is a significant portion of this game, whether it's you doing it or the the enemies or just like the world itself. You mentioned, you know, the boy's running nonstop. He gets through a farm and then he kind of makes his way into a city, and you see people like, you know, marching in unison, but like in a almost just like daze.
Yeah, like a zombie like state.
Yeah, and there's a sequence where you fall through a hole in a ceiling and you fall right into one of these assembly lines of people, and a camera starts watching you. So you're like, oh, I got to pretend like I'm, you know, these zombified people and marching in step. So controlling humans against their will to some degree just permeates so much of the early sections of this game. And I agree with you 100%. When you put on this equipment that lets you move these dazed people around and make them do what you want, it's kind of like, well, I solved that puzzle, but I didn't feel great about it.
Yeah, and I think that's what the game's really going for, is no matter what you do in this game, you just don't feel comfortable about it. Like, it's everything that you're doing, just everything seems just a little off. It just doesn't seem right. And it's the atmosphere and the world that's built around you and what you're doing. Even when you're on that farm, like, you have the chicks and you're like, oh, that's adorable. But then you're doing stuff like to get the chicks like to follow you and stuff like that. And you're like, it just seems weird and seems wrong. Like when you go into the room with all the pigs and stuff like that, and just like, this isn't, I don't know. It's just uncomfortable.
Yeah. Absolutely. So this kind of technological sci-fi city is a good stretch in the middle. You're evading human enemies who are both trying to either physically capture you or outright shoot you. You're avoiding some like robots with big spotlight eyes, and if they catch you in their lights, they kind of they like tranquilize you and drag you away.
Yep.
You're avoiding dogs, and the dogs are terrible. And then After a while of running and solving puzzles, you find a submarine, which you steal, which leads us into a journey underwater. So what was your impression of like these underwater cities that you explore, Josh?
Let me just start off by saying the swimming mechanics in this game were actually great.
Mm.
Like I didn't have a problem with this at all. I didn't feel that it was like annoying or anything like that. I think everything that was done underwater was kind of beautiful. Like it was so dark and mysterious, but at the same time it seemed almost peaceful compared to what's happening above the ground. Like I mean, I could be, you know, interpreting this completely differently because of all the danger that was underwater, but it did just feel a little bit more relaxed.
Yeah. I think it's because the water sections, some points of them, they're big.
Yes.
And this game has a linear sense to it. Like, you know, you're running left to right, like, you know, the earliest video games had you do. But when you get to the water sections, sometimes you're dropped into big open arenas where you can play with all the 2.5D space. And I could see that's maybe it's just like the sense of awe you had when you kind of got that freedom.
Right.
You know,
what'd you think of the whole underwater stuff?
I'm not gonna lie, I agree with you that the swimming mechanics were pretty good, which is like a thing that like gaming always says is like not the case. It's like, oh, but the swimming was bad, and here it was good. Good range of movement, very clear parameters for when the character is about to lose their air, you know.
Yeah.
The submarine sections, I am not gonna lie, at the outset I was like, how long is this gonna be?
Yeah.
Because I was like, but the more I kind of got the hang of controlling the sub and using the little mechanic where you can like charge the sub up and knock it into some wall, like exposed brick and break through, I found a new appreciation for it and I came to like it. How did you feel about the sections where the creepy little mer people started attacking you, whether were in the submarine or not?
Yeah, it was terrifying. And when you finally realize that you have to use the light to kind of take them away or like deter them from attacking you inside the submarine, their movement was so scary. And I don't even think it's their movement. I think it was just the movement of their hair underwater was so realistic in such
absolutely.
A 2D, you know, art style. God, it was so good. It just added like, what type of danger is this? What is it? Because you can't see its face. And that's one awesome thing I think with this game is you can't see any character's face. And when you do, it's just pretty much a blank slate. There's no eyes, no mouth, no nose, like no nothing. They're just blank slates.
Yeah. The little girl, she's like part piranha, part the girl from the ring. This super deadly attacker who can move through the water with grace, but the way the hair is just kind of up in tendrils because of the water, she just looks so intimidating. I'm not gonna lie, the first time I saw her in the sub, I was like, ha, I'm in the sub, you're no danger to me. And then she breaks through the glass and pulls you. I was like, oh no. Oh, yeah.
When the actual part of the game where it pulls you underwater, what did you think about that?
I was freaking out. So yeah, there is a section where one of these merfolk, I guess, like, you know, drags you down, and I'm like, okay, this is a death animation, I screwed up, I'm waiting, but she pulls you down further and further, and you kind of get the impression that maybe she's a good one or something. Mm-hmm. But she, as you're sinking, you pass like a mind control thing. I assumed it was because of the yellow light, and she like puts the device on you, or almost in you, I thought.
Yeah. It looked like a weird Stargate portal from the TV.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you could suddenly breathe underwater. Like, mm-hmm. she's gifted you her abilities or something.
Yeah.
And that's when the game...
Was it gills that you were given? Like, I didn't know that. I was like, I don't know, but now I'm happy.
something supernatural happened, which was very unique in the kind of oppressive sci-fi setting. You know, it was like, oh, like this is, and now, like I said, your character can breathe underwater and explore all these massive spaces without the submarine. So it was like, okay, game changer, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From there, though, we go to pretty much a giant underground science facility, like a testing lab facility. And that's when the game starts to get really weird.
Really weird and really upsetting. Than it's been.
Yeah, weirder than it's been.
So through your explorations of this lab, you see that the scientists have been working on this thing that is canonically called the Huddle.
Yes.
And it is this mass of
disgusting
kind of like...
disgusting mass.
Like, it's literally humans smashed together into a big ball
like
with some
potato.
Of their... like a giant potato, but with human limbs sticking out of it. And all the humans who have been smashed into it are clearly all alive and conscious, but they've all been fused. And in this climactic moment, the boy is trying to free the Huddle from its chamber, and he gets absorbed into the mass. And from that section on, you are controlling the Huddle.
Yeah.
So, Josh, what did you think of the Huddle when you were able to play as it?
So... I thought it was kind of funny at first because it was like the lab creature just breaks free now and is causing all kinds of chaos around the facility. And then I realized, crap, this is the way that the game's going to end. It's going to end with you as this thing. And as I was playing through, I got kind of frustrated because I wasn't happy with the way that this ended.
Okay.
And I know a lot of people have their theories of why it did or and stuff, but like, I was just like, okay, this is, you're just trying to break free now. And like an awesome story that could have took so many different turns turned into this super weird sci-fi cluster that just, It just like my hype for it just kind of went from like a 13 out of 10 down to like a 4. And I was like,
okay, like that's really low. That's lower than I expected you to say. Yeah.
It really hit me because I was just like, I was having so much fun with this game and I was so excited. And then that happened. And I'm just like, I kind of feel depressed now because of this. But what did you think of the Huddle?
The Huddle was very disturbing. I don't know if you have seen some of the earlier films of David Cronenberg, like Videodrome, but it's that kind of body horror, or another one of his movies, The Fly, you know, just the human body has been experimented on to a degree where these horrible mutations have happened and they're so unsettling. Those are the vibes I got off of The Huddle. Just some interesting pieces of the Huddle in my research on the game, it, like, the huddle is like one of the most talked about things in like the development history of this game. The creators actually had envisioned the huddle in 2010. So pre-Limbo release, like, they knew what the huddle looked like.
Yeah.
And it was just this idea. And the huddle, as after it was sketched by a concept artist, informed the art style of the rest of the game. And part of how they kind of decided the way that the huddle would move, I thought this was really interesting, is that they studied the way humans moved and behaved in mosh pits.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Kind of and, makes sense.
Yeah, just like tight spaces. What do you do with your limbs and how do you operate with your limbs?
Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. But, you know, the huddle sections become kind of this mad dash. I actually loved how you described it. It's you're the science experiment, you know, wreaking havoc against its creators, because, you know, you burst through the rest of this facility as the huddle. You crush people and you knock people out of windows. And yeah, you're just on this mad dash to escape, and it doesn't matter who gets in your way.
Yeah.
They're either going to get squished under you or like tossed aside. But yes, it ends, you know, rather quickly. And I, you know, I guess understandably, in your opinion, anticlimactically, where you break through a wall, and the momentum of you busting the wall causes the huddle to roll down this very steep incline through a forest, and it collapses at the bank of a riverbed. And for like the first time in the game, a ray of sunshine is visible through all the fog, and it's on the spot where the huddle lays after it rolls down this hill. And that's when the credits begin after a long pause. You know, it's the huddle, either unconscious or dead, just laying in the sunlight.
Right.
As the credits roll.
So that's where a lot of theories come into play, is did it die because of the sun? Because it's been inside in the dark the entire time, the first time it hits the sunlight, because it stays on it throughout the entire credits.
It does, yeah.
And when it's the sun's on shot. It doesn't move. None of the limbs move. Nothing moves at all. But it's constantly moving and active when there's no sunlight. So the sunlight stop it. That's why it was in the giant dark tank. You know what I mean? Like, there's... I don't know.
I hadn't even actually considered that, Josh, and that's like an incredible point. It's a great visual detail that I didn't pay attention to. I was just more just kind of like reading the credits. I was like glancing down because I was like, is the huddle getting smaller? But I didn't like consider, oh, it probably died in the sunlight. But it's a great point. It's a great idea. Are you aware of the alternate ending to this game?
And that's where I was going to go next. Yes.
All right. So tell our viewers about the alternate ending.
So throughout the game, there are 14 orbs, these giant power generated orbs around the game that you have to find. They're all hidden. And you destroy them, pretty much unplug them. And when you go and do that, you are taken into a room. And this room is inside the middle of the cornfield. You go down into this like underground bunker. You pull the last orb out, or to stop the last generator from running. You have to put in a particular music code to unlock this door. When you go inside of it, you are presented with another kind of like test facility, but it's like a really small one.
Mm-hmm.
At the very end of it, there is like a switch or something like that, or another generator that you have to pull. It's been a while since I've seen it. But when you do, in the background, you'll notice that there's another mind control dock that has a whole bunch of wires running to it. And when you pull the cord, it kills all power to that machine, and your character slumps over like one of the zombified people in the entire world. So and the game just fades to black. So I'm wondering, with the alternative ending, is if you pull that plug, does it stops you from playing, which it stops the main character from moving. So it's almost like you and the controller were the mind control device for this character.
Yes. I did not get the alternate ending. I didn't realize there was 14 orbs. I got like five. But I did read that it's kind of a meta idea of mind control. And yes, in this sequence, he's disconnecting his connection to you, the player. And then he's just part of the world again. You know, he's not the active standout participant.
So you said you found five of them, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's actually another hidden one before the room where you have to put the music code into. If you go to the left, there's like a little grate against the wall that has like a red light behind it, like a hue. You go into that room and it's kind of like an old photo room, like a photo lab. And when you go and pull that one out, now that one's not powered on though, which is even weirder. That one's not powered on, but when you pull it out, you get an achievement or a trophy called Field Research, right? The achievement slash trophy's description says unearthing secrets. Now, what's really weird about that is if you look at the photos that are above where you're at, one of those photos is a picture of the huddle.
Okay.
So did the huddle get out before?
It's very interesting, and it plays into an idea that I like read a little bit in my like researching the people's interpretations of the ending. And it's kind of this concept that like the huddle in either case may have actually been controlling, you know, you like
bringing
in the beginning of
it.
The game. Yeah. Is the huddle calling you to come save it? And by you disconnecting the sequence in this hidden room, you're freeing yourself from the huddle's mind control. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And I would just say, like, given how much work, like I said, the huddle had in the development history of this game, it's clearly a very important piece of the puzzle for the developers. So yeah. I could see that being an attention. Yeah.
And one thing with the game, too, is there's so many other little things throughout the game where you notice like there's people laying on the sides of the road or sides of the street, and they have like wires and coils like connected into them. What is going on like with those? What's going on with the weird like pods in the forest? And you mentioned like the movie The Fly, and those, that's exactly what those pods look like. But you notice them in other places. Some of them are powered on, some of them aren't powered on. Why are these people in this facility collecting truckloads of actual humans? Are they really humans or are they test subjects? Like
it's incredibly interesting.
There's so many things, so many different ways you can think of this game.
What if the huddle, I'm just doing this on me. What if the huddle was the real enemy all along? And what we viewed as this kind of tyrannical, dark Big Brother government, they weren't like rounding up people and kidnapping them. They were rounding up people that they were worried the huddle was going to try to like take. Like, what if the people being brainwashed were being brainwashed to like, you know, basically, this government was brainwashing people before the huddle could brainwash them, you know?
Yeah. Trying to protect them almost.
Crazy. Yeah.
The bad guy is actually the good guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's incredibly interesting to think about.
When you were playing the game, though, what did you think was happening as you were going through
it? I assumed something along the lines of like human experimentation. Given that the mind control puzzles in the game where you wear the little yellow dome hat, you know, you take control of these human bodies that look like they were specifically designed for manual labor. I'm like, okay, it's something where there's a dystopian government and they're rounding up poor people and turning them into free labor, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, and then you get to the underwater sections and it's like, okay, maybe pollution destroyed society, and that's how the dystopian government got in power or something. I was like, all right, you know, it seemed like there was a lot of ideas strung together. And with the climax of the huddle, I can't say that all those ideas line up, but it was never not super interesting. You know what I mean? At any point.
When I was playing through, I wanted it, honestly, and it's going to sound weird, I wanted it to be a story about like the Nazis and the Jews and stuff like that. Cause that's the whole beginning of that game for a good while. That's what it honestly made me feel like. You were a Jewish kid running away from the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything had everything was kind of building up to it for the longest time until you started to go super sci-fi with things. And then it was like, okay, well, you know, the Nazis were doing experiments to make these super soldiers and these, you know, really high intelligent beings and stuff like that. Like, is it going to continue to keep going this way? And then it just got balls to the wall crazy. And I don't know. Like, I was, my story that I had in my head was so much better than what I was given. And it's one of those things, like, I appreciate it sometimes, but I, majority of the time, I hate when a story can't give you an actual ending.
Okay.
Like, I can understand, like, Inception. That was, that's, I get it. I understand the idea behind that, you know, like big movies, big games where it's like, well, you create the ending yourself. What do you think's going to happen? Like, yes, I understand it's a very artistic way of going about it, but at the same time, it comes off super lazy because now you're making me do the work.
Okay.
Like, I don't want to sound like entitled when I say like, oh, I should deserve an ending.
No, no.
It's, it's one of those things like, I just put all this time into it. I gave all this money for it to be given this. Like,
yeah,
it was just a letdown, like, of an ending. The, everything all the way up until like that last 10 minutes was super worth this game.
Okay. Well, I'm going to segue to kind of like respond to that. I'm going to segue into what we had planned next, which is just asking each other, do we think this is better than Limbo? And so let me just say, I think that similarly to Limbo, they wanted the ending to be ambiguous enough that the fans would just talk about it. And the, and you know, the conversations that came out of that would interest people. And I know what you're saying. I get completely 100% what you're saying. Like, there are certain movies that, or certain books or video games, you know, whatever, that they want that audience-driven ambiguity, because either they're trying to prove a point or they're trying to be like, well, we want you to think deeply on this. But it doesn't always work, because sometimes you, if the work itself isn't strong, an ambiguous ending will leave people with questions of not about their experience, but about the work. And so the point that I'm trying to get to in all this is that I think while this was very good and I really admired it and enjoyed it, I don't think it lives up to the strengths of Limbo, simply because Limbo had more of a central idea that it carried through beginning to end, and its ambiguity was kind of, you know, a little easier to suss through, whereas Inside seems like it's tackling a lot of things at once, and they don't always seem like they fit together. Like, oh, these are all big-brained sci-fi dystopian ideas, but, like, how does mind control connect to genetic experiments, connect to underwater doomsday, connect to, you know, body horror, you know what I mean? It's it's a lot of cool things put side by side, but not put together, you know, not, they're not put into a huddle.
And there's a reason that people still talk about Limbo to this day. Like, people really do. They, it's a fantastic indie title. Inside came out, people talked about it a little bit. The whole beginning of it was, I can't believe it's on Xbox and not on PlayStation, blah, 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 blah. Whatever. Who cares, right?
Yeah.
But it was going to come to everything sooner or later. Limbo was out on every damn console.
Yeah.
Even Linux. But, but, like, nobody really talks about Inside. And I don't know if it's just the game, that ending just left such a bitter taste in a lot of people's mouth that just, they just forgot about it. But
possible,
it, it possible. Is like, you have so many ideas and you're trying to fuse them all together to make one cohesive story, where Limbo, people understand what the word Limbo means. So what happens in that game, you would understand that your character's in Limbo.
Sure. Sure.
Like, I don't think that this is better than Limbo. I think that there's a lot of great pieces to this game, but overall, the experience inside of Limbo, I think, just works better and is a more cohesive story than what Inside gave us.
I feel this, I feel very similarly, and You know, it still saw a good deal of critical acclaim, and it's a game I would still recommend. It comes with the caveat of, like, get it on sale or through a subscription service.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'll play this again.
I bought, but this I'm glad day I did. One, okay. Just to give you an idea.
Okay. I'm glad I played it. Don't get me wrong. It's just, I think it was a one and done for me.
Yeah. And there's a lot of games that are out there that are like that. And it's one of those things. It's an experience. Playdead has a great history of games, whether it's just two games that they've released. Like, it's not a bad game. It just could be better in certain aspects. It's a solid 8 out of 10, I would say.
That seems pretty fair. I would agree with that.
I think the last 10 minutes, like, isn't going to be justifiable to say don't play the game because of the last 10 minutes of it. Like, there's still a great experience to have through the whole beginning side of it. Like I said, it's 2 hours, 2.5 hours long. That's still an hour and 50 minutes of great puzzle work.
What was your favorite puzzle overall to solve? Your favorite sequence?
There was a puzzle with dogs where there was three dogs chasing you and you had to constantly keep going over this particular fence in a certain way so they didn't maul you to death, and you had to constantly keep ripping the board off of the wall. It was just so intense that, like, you didn't know if you were going to be able to do it in time. And once it all came down to that perfectly timed danger that I talked about, that it was just like, I can't believe that I got through it, like, by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah, I agree with you with that. And the same page with the merpeople towards the end, when you're out of the sub, outsmarting the AI was some of the most interesting kind of combat sequences this game had. You know, the dogs using the fence and the timing of their movements, and the merpeople, you know, making sure you were spaced out enough from them in the water. Very good use of the enemy AI. I really enjoyed that. My personal favorite sequence, not gonna lie, the shockwave room.
Oh, that was awesome. Yeah.
There's this room where at the center of it, in kind of the background, you hear like an implosion and then a shockwave rocks across the world. And if you're not behind cover, you literally get like splattered. You implode.
Yeah.
And the first few times, like the first time I imploded, not even realizing what the shockwave was going to do, I was like, whoa. And then, you know, the puzzles they create, it's like, you know, you have to move in time with these mechanical covers throughout the world. So well done. So much clockwork precision necessary. That was a very cool and very satisfying sequence. So that'd be my highlight.
I think before the shockwave room too, there, the creepiness of the room of all the dummies inside of it, where they're all sitting on the school desk and then the shockwave hits and they all kind of just bobble a little bit and you're like, whoa, what's going on? They all look like normal humans sitting there in the desk. And then when it comes and they shake, you can see like little like crash test like symbols on their heads. And it's like, oh, OK, they're not real. Like,
mm-hmm.
it was like a little bit of like a little jump scare almost.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I agree.
Hey, everybody. Future Josh here. As I'm editing the episode, I noticed one thing we actually forgot to talk about, and that was the Inside Special Edition that came out on IM8bit.com. The Special Edition came out at $375. And the weird thing about it was created by Playdead and Real Doll. And if you're not familiar with Real Doll, Real Doll makes, well, they make toys. They make dolls, realistic dolls, I would say. But what we have here playing through on the side is actually going to be an unboxing of the Inside Collector's Edition, just to kind of show you what came with it. Now, one thing you're going to see inside here is there going to be a physical copy of the game, which I think it only came out for the PlayStation 4, which is weird that you couldn't get it on another console, but okay, whatever. But we're going to jump ahead a little bit here. You can see you get some artwork inside the game as well. You get the nice little slipcover there. Ooh, an alternative slipcover also. But the real treat is what's inside the other box. So this is where Real Doll kind of comes into play. You got a nice, shiny, Look at that. That's actually a pretty nice looking box. But this tells you kind of everything that's inside of it. And what you get inside is actually a realistic version of the huddle. So here you have the boy curled up kind of in the fetal position. And guess where that boy goes? Yeah. You'll don't worry. You'll definitely see where this boy goes. So you rip this part open here. You're going to get some more artwork. Little postcards, stuff like that. Some nice stills from inside the game. But inside this package, you get the huddle. Yes. In its real doll form, it is weird, to say the least. You get a nice little pedestal for it. Slide it right in there. It's kind of weird. The boy actually, I think, goes inside the huddle too. So it's kind of weird. Is it worth $375? I really don't think so. But, I mean, who am I to judge when it comes to a collector's edition? If you really like this game, this might be something that you would, you know, want to buy. And I think it's still available to this day. So, yeah, that's just a small look at the inside collector's edition. Back to you, past Josh and Tom.
That's what we thought of inside, but what about you? What did you think about this game from Playdead? Tell us your pros, your cons, your feelings, your gameplay memories in the comments. We'd love to hear them. And Playdead doesn't have anything publicly announced yet, but you know, there was a good gap between Limbo and this, so we imagine maybe in the mid-2020s we'll see.
Hold on. Going off of Playdead's Wikipedia stuff that I'm seeing, Playdead's third game, which has been teased as early as January 2017, will be a fairly lonely sci-fi game somewhere in the universe. The game will likely use third-person perspectives within a 3D world. The studio has been tired of the limitations of 2D games, they say. The image teasers of the game were released through Playdead's job listing over several months of 2019. Playdead and Epic Games announced in March 2020 that Epic Games will publish this title, providing full development costs while giving full creative control to Playdead, and will split the profit 50-50 after Epic recoups its investment on release.
That's really interesting. Just the multiple levels of, first of all, just to say, they were tired of the limitations of 2D. I mean, you created those games and that engine for Limbo. Like, no one forced you to do it. So, I mean, I respect that you're going third person. That's really cool. But, like, I don't know. It seems like they're, like, complaining about, you know, their own problem.
Right.
But not even a problem, but...
Well, I mean, you figure Limbo came out in 2010. Inside came out in 2006. There's a six-year gap between those two games.
Sure, sure.
So, we're probably going to see the next one, I would say, in 2 years, then, if they're going to do a six-year gap between all of them.
Ideally, we'll have to see how much the COVID shutdown may have affected development. They played it as a very small studio.
Yeah, 40 people.
But Epic Games kind of getting involved and fronting the costs. That's, you know, they're hitting the big time. You know, in movie terms, this would be their blank check. You know, Playdead getting the money and the backing to do whatever they want. So here's hoping they shoot big and that they deliver the same quality that they've had in the past.
Well, only time will tell. And once that game comes out, we'll be able to talk about it 3 years after that.
Exactly.
So, until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see you in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.